Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, short story writer and novelist, Michael Croucher. So, are you a planner when it comes to writing a novel, Michael? Do you start with an outline and a plot?
What I usually do is plot out the first five or six chapters, and the last one just to let me know, the last chapter just to let me know or give me an idea of where the story's going. The early chapters may hold together somewhat, but usually by the fourth chapter, the story is heading off in a new direction. And for me, that's okay. In my first two novels, the last chapter didn't hold together as I plotted them, but they were. But to be honest, I like it when stories head off in new directions, and half the fun is writing them and seeing the new directions. I keep plotting out the final chapters just to keep a sense of direction and to give me something to chew on subconsciously.
Right. So in a way, you set off with a plan, and then maybe the characters take over more.
They always do, yeah.
So how important is the character of the investigator in a crime novel?
I think it's very important, and it's very important the characters around him as well. Protagonists that try not to influence his outlook or his point of view with too much of my police background. I want to have him more a broader character than that.
But you are writing police procedurals, really, are you?
Oh, for sure.
For your crime novels.
That's part of it, but, yeah. I definitely want the story to be a little bit broader than that.
Right,
so that's why
right.
I think I like to bring other characters in.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And develop them as well as the main character.
Yes. So when and where do you like to write?
I like to write at home, in my den, in a
little cozy spot?
In a cozy chair, a wingback chair, as a matter of fact. Often with my feet up. I can see my roll top across the desk, so I know anything's there. If I need it, it's over there. And, I like to start early.
Mm-hmm.
I start, I'm up at 5.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be writing by 6.
Are you writing with a pen, a pencil, or a computer?
Always a computer. My laptop and that's it. But I want to be wrapped up by noon.
Okay, so I believe you plan to make Phil Mahood the protagonist in a series of stories. So tell us a little about your first book about him, Diamond Run, and explain why you want to write about more of his adventures.
Well, Diamond Run is a novel basically about a ruthless organized crime cell that operates out of Toronto. The cell commits major diamond heists in New York City, high-end jewelry thefts in and around Toronto. A large percentage of the New York City goods are secreted away in Ontario by a co-conspirator, and the police and the organized mobsters are thrown into a race to recover the goods. And in doing that, they leave a trail of bodies that runs from New York, Toronto, and Hamilton. And Phil Mahood is a sergeant in the Canadian Organized Crime Task Force that finds himself battling a very psychotic mob killer who has targeted a Niagara area woman, believing her to be the key to recovering his loot. The woman is also a crown witness and the girlfriend of the jeweler who fenced much of the stolen property. Unfortunately for Mahood, he ends up having an affair with the woman, which is a procedural no-no, and his superiors are also concerned that the woman, an attractive university professor, may in fact know the whereabouts of the diamonds. But Mahood is convinced that she doesn't. While trying to save his job and protect his new girlfriend, Mahood finds that this killer is really hard to keep in his sights. And the story takes a strange twist when a psychic investigator enters the hunt. The psychic also helps Mahood's girlfriend get to the bottom of some very bizarre happenings around her beautiful Victorian farmhouse. Diamond Run is the first in a Phil Mahood series, and the one I'm currently writing is the second. Now, the reason I want to keep the series going because Mahood has kind of evolved into quite a complicated character, and with very complicated love life.
It sounds it.
Yeah. And so there are a lot more layers to him and to the characters around him. He's got a rough and ready partner, Ernie, his spiritually inclined and very puzzling girlfriend, Sue, and her two best friends, the nosy psychic and the psychic's boyfriend, a soon-to-be ordained divinity professor, Charles. And Charles has ambitions to eventually become a police chaplain. I know there's a lot of range for this group of characters and for the investigations and cast of rogues that Phil's task force has ahead of him, so I want to keep it going.
Sounds as though you could write 12 of those.
I'm sure I could. if I had the time. I don't mean the time of day, I mean the time.
I know what you mean. Okay, so your first crime novel is a standalone called Bravo's Veil.
Right.
And I think you're going to read to us from that one.
Yes.
Can you introduce us to the characters and story first?
Yes. It's a crime novel, but it's set in World War II England. Paul and David Collins are the main characters in this story. They're brothers, and they're orphaned before the war starts. Paul is cared for by the maternal grandmother in London, and David is sent to live with the paternal grandparents in Hampshire. Paul, like many thousands of British school children, is evacuated at the start of the war, but David isn't. Young Paul leaves his Cornwall billet on a very cold December night to run an unusual errand. He mysteriously disappears from a nearby beach. Many years later, David sets out to learn the truth and to once and for all determine his brother's fate. He traces Paul's time in Cornwall and seeks to discover the roles that Judith Chalice, an attractive billeting official, and her boyfriend, Kevin O'Neill, a local constable, played in his disappearance. MI5 operatives who were operating in the area at the time and the elderly couple that Paul was billeted with also come under David's scrutiny.
Okay.
David's emotional investigation serves up many surprises, but one extraordinary and disturbing secret shocks him to the core and changes his life forever. So that's what the story's about.
Okay, so read us a bit from it. Okay. Which bit are you going to read, the beginning or the end?
No, I better find it first. Okay, and this little short part I'm going to read, billeting officials have just delivered one of the main characters in the story, Paul Collins, and another evacuated London schoolboy named Ian, to a Cornwall farmhouse. The farmer and his wife had reluctantly agreed to take the boys. This scene describes the boys' first hour in their wartime billet. Clive Obney steered the boys to the kitchen table. Two plates sat on a sideboard. Obney picked the plates up and dropped them heavily onto the table. Each plate held a thick piece of buttered bread and a pool of watery brown stew. Ian's eyes bulged at the sight of Obney's scarred and mangled hand. He covered his nose to shield it from the smell of mutton. Paul began eating right away, little taste of the stew and big bites of the bread. He turned his head to the sink area and Mr. Obney's back. "We have mutton at home sometimes. My Nan says it has a lot of goodness. Thank you, Mr. Obney." There was no reply. Obney turned and went outside. 10 minutes later, he clambered back through the front door with both hands on the handle of a large pail of water. The water sloshed as he walked. It came close to overflowing as he turned into the passage. "Down here, you two. One of you bring lamp from mantel." Paul picked up the lamp as they entered their new bedroom. The lamp flickered and the room filled with shadows. Obney poured water into a white jug on a rickety table. Two small blue and white porcelain bowls, a hand towel, and a piece of soap were also on the table. He set the pail down and looked at Paul. "Put lamp on shelf." The lamp flickered again as Paul carried it across the room. A settee and a cot bracketed a chest of drawers, each with an uncovered pillow and some blankets. Two chamber pots with pink flowered lids were on the floor. "Privy's outside at end of passage. If you use those pots, you empty him into privy first thing and rinse them under pump." Obney stood near the shelf with the lamp. The lamplight gave the boys an unnerving look at their new guardian. His face was leathery and laced with wrinkles and brown and black mottles. Larger mottles were on his neck. Thick tufts of hair protruded from his ears, and more strands curled up from the bridge of his nose. Obney's shadow cast against the far wall. It loomed over the boys. When I knock in the morning, you two up to it. Lots to do. He extinguished the lamp and left the room. The door thumped shut behind him. A moment later, somewhere down the passageway, another door closed. Paul and Ian looked at each other, their faces pale ghosts in the dim starlight coming through the tiny window. Ian's mouth was slack, his eyes wide. I want to go home. It's all right, Ian. We may like it here, said Paul. He sat on the edge of the cot, staring out of the window, trying to believe what he'd just said to Ian. Over the silhouettes of outbuildings and distant trees and the tangle of branches, Paul focused on the night sky and its vista of stars. He wondered if his brother David could see any of the same stars from Alverstoke.
Thank you, Michael. That was interesting.
Thank you.
So, many thanks to Michael Croucher for introducing us to his work. And where can our listeners buy your books, Michael?
My books are published by Draft 2 Digital. That's Draft, D-R-A-F-T, the number 2, and Digital. They're available through a choice. My books are available through a choice of online retailers. I have a direct link for Bravo's Vale to make it easier for readers. It's draft2digital.com/book/224021. The direct link for Diamond Run is draft2digital.com/book/282585. My first book of shorts will be available by December through the same publisher.
I see. So you can't buy print copies?
Some of the retailers will provide print, but that changes from day to day. The industry is changing so quickly, you don't know who's going to be doing it
I see.
Now.
I
so
see. Okay.
There are some of them do provide print
yeah.
copies.
Yeah. So this is interesting. Where is the digital publisher based?
They're located in Oklahoma, I believe.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And of course online.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, to our audience, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to our listeners at any time and from anywhere. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Truly Local Radio.